Hello and welcome to Keyframes, a podcast about anime. I'm your host, Ben Halliburton. With me today is Duncan.
Hey there.
And John.
Hello.
Did you feel a little bit of the A before I said Duncan? I forgot that Andy's not here. He is indeed traveling, and that is what we are doing this podcast. Not traveling. I unfortunately have work in a few hours, but we are talking about travel in anime. And I guess we informally decided that this is your topic, Duncan, so take it away. Why'd we pick this?
It was basically just because we're like, well, what are we going to do next time? And Andy's like, I'm not going to be here, I'm traveling. And I go, easy topic there, man. Easy topic. Thanks, man. Even though you're not here, you're helping out. But it's a good one because, like, it's such a universal part of just existing and being human. Like, there's so many different, like, monomyth ideas going around, and one of them is like there are only two stories: a person goes on a journey and a stranger comes to town. And it's interesting because that is two sides of the same story. Every time you travel to a new town, you are the stranger arriving. You are, at some level, we recognize that the most sort of basic level of human social friction is someone new in some place new, not quite knowing how to fit in, not quite knowing how things work. And I think, like, that transfers to drama very well. Like, this idea that you walk in somewhere and maybe you just say something a little wrong, or you just don't quite know the customs right, and you feel strange, you feel other in a way that you don't most of the time.
Yeah, it's interesting. Not to jump in right away, but I am. It's interesting because I finally watched the Kino Notabi movies, quote unquote movies. They're half hour specials.
Yeah.
Like, Kino Notabi literally is about, like, a journey, but the episodes are so much about going to a strange place and figuring out what the deal is. And then the thing that frustrates me about Kino's journey is that the upshot is Kino being like, wow, that's fucked up, and then leaving.
And possibly
shooting someone or refusing to shoot someone. Because, I think I have a lot of different categories when I was going through my stuff. But the wanderer archetype is interesting because I think there's a distinction. I left out stories that were quests with a specific objective, unless there was, like, heavy logistical concerns. I left out stuff that's escape, like Eden of the East, people running away, and they're just running and running, and there's no end because you're just running from people, and the story will end when they catch you or stop. But with, like, the wanderer, the sort of, like, Western archetype of the guy comes into town and, like, disrupts the status quo, it does seem to have this kind of, like, extra genre adhesion. There are so many anime, especially shonen anime, about just, like, wandering around and, like, coming upon, like, fucked up shit and reacting to it. And it's funny that that's how we conceptualize a journey, at least as a kind of genre affectation.
The wanderer is an archetype which anime really likes. And I think part of it is the structure you describe with Kino's. That is perfect for episodic media. Like, just... This is what they want. Everything nicely tied up within a couple of chapters of the manga or a couple of episodes, and then next. One of the things which defines anime as a media is it is often a adapted media. Like, it is so much of what we see begins as a manga, and so it has its structure coming from the manga. So it's episodic writing then shown in an episodic viewing format, and that really trends towards certain types of stories. You can have a story where you are going on a long journey and you're passing through places, and you're not necessarily stopping to everyone and meeting a new bunch of strange goons or weird rules and stuff. But why would you do that when you have to fill 13 episodes?
Yeah.
I mean, I love the Wanderer archetype. Obviously, I've said on the show before, my favorite anime is Mushishi, and that's 100% exactly that.
Yeah.
He's wandering around solving problems for people with weird little magic bugs.
Visible magic bugs.
Invisible magic bugs. When I think about, like, travel, though, what appeals to me, there's multiple things. One, I like just going places, which I guess fits into what we've been talking about so far. But another thing that I like is escaping, getting away from my real life. I want to go somewhere to be somewhere different, to be not necessarily a different person, but just
a change of scenery, a change of context.
Yeah, and that's also why, like, I could have cheated and brought up a lot of those anime that are about literally escaping to the country or whatever, like Rakumon or whatever, to be that's sort of the same feeling. I just like the freedom to just be able to go anywhere and do anything and not have any obligations that I'm stuck with. So, like, in the case of, like, I don't know, like, just hopping on a motorcycle and riding away.
Easy ride.
Kind of like Kino's journey, like what she does or what they do, like just fucking go anywhere. That all that said, the one thing that I probably don't like about traveling is the actual act of traveling. Especially when I have to like get on a plane and fly, that sucks. But you know,
so one of the subcategories for me is like anime that are focused on vehicular travel, and I feel that in anime that tends to divide pretty cleanly into motorcycle travel and train travel.
Yeah, that's true. There's no road trips in anime. There are a couple, but like, you know,
it's very rare that, you know, people get in a car and they're driving halfway across the island. It does happen. It's usually at the climax of a show that's largely about something else, like in Shirobako when they have to drive out to like deliver the tapes or something. But generally speaking, like the archetype split between like the freedom of bike travel and everything from Rolling Girls to Super Cub to Michiko Eihachin is about just like going to different places. It's kind of a subtype, a mechanized wanderer archetype sort of thing, as opposed to the very destination focused train stories. I'm thinking of like Bakano, Doom Train, obviously, or 5 centimeters a second with like the middle story, especially, which I think is probably one of the most grounded depictions of like the act of travel in an anime, because it is like this young boy getting like doing his first like big trip to see a girl, and he's going to go out there and visit her and then going to come back a day later, which is a very specific kind of trip that maybe I'm just a homebody, but I think most people only attempt that sort of thing like a few times in their life, of just like going out for a day visit to somebody, where the travel time is far greater than the time you will spend at the destination. Yeah. And I don't know, I was playing American Truck Simulator last night. It really did strike me how one of the things that really captures America so well is how empty it is.
There is a lot of emptiness in America, yeah.
Yes. You're driving through countryside, and granted it's not the beautiful Furusatsu Satoyama of anime countryside, but it is just like moving between these points of interest, and the difference between moving beyond moving between them on rails like they're courses of a dinner, or being able to ride around and change your mind at every stop, like a motorcycle or a car, more of like a dim sum experience. And it's interesting how both of these I think of as deeply logistics focused travel subgenres, and yet the feel, the upshot, the message, the takeaway is radically different if you sit down and think about them.
Yeah, it's interesting you talk about how travel in America is very much different to travel in the UK or Japan, because it one thing I noticed when I was going through these shows is how many of them are only within Japan, how travel as a genre really doesn't explore other countries. Like you very rarely get like, oh, we're driving across Africa or across America, apart from JoJo's.
Unless you're JoJo's.
Or going across Siberia if you're Golden Camry.
Arc at Icefield 21, where they chase a truck across America as part of training or something like that. That's beside the point, I guess.
The forms of travel Ben mentions are both very local forms. They're not international forms of travel. They are, you just go from village to village. That's the units it's dealing with. It's not continent to continent or state to state. It's village to village. I think that may be an island nation thing, because that's definitely a British vibe, that whenever we hear the distance is you guys driving America, we're like, pardon? Like, that why would anyone drive that? What on God's green earth are you doing driving that far? Like, that'd be plain territory. That.
Yeah, and like we were saying earlier, it's not even just, like, distance, it's also emptiness. Like, if you travel through, like, from the Midwest to the West Coast, that's desert. Like most of it, it's nothing. You're not going to see anything. You're going to see the world's largest ball of twine, and then nothing for 7,000 miles.
Yeah, and I mean, I as a child, I my family's biannual trip was from Dallas to Sioux City, where my grandparents lived, and like I-35 is more interesting than a lot of roads, but man, you have to plan for something interesting to happen, otherwise you're just on the road for 11 hours and you run out of books, you run out of tapes, you run out of
yeah. But at the same time, like, to me, there's a sort of, I don't want to give it too much weight, but I'm just going to say romance to the idea of just getting on a bike and riding down that long, empty road by yourself for the hours. And
I mean, that's totally a romantic idea.
Like I said, it's just that freedom that you get. Like, and I think that that's something that, like you said, it doesn't happen in the more realism-based anime, like the ones that take place in Japan. But yeah. I think it happens a lot more in fantasy stuff where, like, or not necessarily fantasy, but otherworldly stuff where they're... you know, Sterny again, just I guess I'll just keep going back to that one. Yeah. It's a really easy example.
Like I said, I cut stuff off that was like a quest to do X. But I did like allow, which rules out a lot of fantasy stories, but I did allow like Frieren and Dungeon Meshi, where like the logistics of travel, and especially like with Frieren, I love how every town they stop at, they stop to resupply and to get the lay of the land and to gather more information. It's a much more pre-modern conception of travel versus in modernity, we don't think about it, but we trust the road signs without even thinking about whether they're going to just leave us in the middle of nowhere. And when you realize that, you feel briefly like very insane because like, yeah, like there could be a sign and just some guy could have put it up outside of his farm and like, who knows, maybe he's pointing you just to a bunch of bandits who he's teamed up with to. So yeah, the assumption that travel will end with a destination and that travel will not end with disaster or detour or what have you is also something that I think that Frieren uniquely captures. Golden Kamuy captures that, like harvesting information, and even Dungeon Meshi, though I think like the logistical like supply element is much more prominent there, like knowing where they're going, knowing what will be there when they arrive, very big and very flavorful element of the plotting.
Weirdly, I've seen that idea explored at the other end of the spectrum with sci-fi, with Planetes, where a lot of its themes revolve around the idea of like human vulnerability in a place where travel is not safe, and like the need to have like social and romantic bonds to help anchor you in this place of almost constant peril. Like there are low-key like dozens of different ways people die in Planetes, and they're not always spectacular. It's like guy just dies of radiation poisoning because he's been up in space too long.
One of the best flourishes in a sci-fi show, like no one else does it like Planetes.
Yeah, and being being utterly unrepentant about it, being like this was the choice I made, this is what I wanted of my life. And for a show where you don't actually have much journeying, it thinks a lot about like the human desire to explore and what the limits and tests that puts on us as a species, both like individually and socially. And I love how like it's sort of answer to that is like Tanabe and Hachi's like slowly revealing each other's vulnerabilities to each other and like forming this romantic bond. Because like Tanabe is this girl who comes in and is like, I believe in love, she's the righteous one. But like they have this great episode where everyone writes their wills, and like Tanabe writes nothing because she has this all this bluster about love and doing the right thing, but she doesn't actually know what she wants for herself and is very unsure of her place in the world. Her and Hachi slowly falling in love and her finding like solace in him and him finding like someone to come back to after his wanderlust is like a really great story within these greater themes. That's actually something like another thing which I found oddly absent from a lot of these, which was somewhere to go back to, like home. Home is strangely absent from a lot of travel shows. It's like we've got all these stories full of people's places and things, people are traveling towards or running away from, but it's so rare for someone or something to sort of like call from them to return. And I wonder if like that's just a structural thing. Like you said, like we want the Wanderer is the archetype we see so often in these, and that's I wonder if that's like the anime equivalent of like how in every YA novel the kids are orphans because they have to have no constraints, they have to have nothing shackling.
I was going to make a comparison between parents and home as things that anime often is like, oops, nope.
I don't have any examples because of course I can't think of any, but I feel like homesickness is a fairly common thing. Maybe they're not explicit about what that home is, but I think that in shows that have long arcs where people are moving around, they do go through those moments where they just want to stop fucking being where they are and go back to where they're stable. But I think that the reason it doesn't pop up in traveling based stories is precisely because the whole point is to escape. That would be my guess.
A lot of times it's
like a forced thing versus a voluntary thing.
And a lot of times it's a much more abstract. This is a jump that I'm surprised I'm making, but like Black Lagoon, where like Rock like clearly misses being around Japanese people, and in a very like we all know what that's like, right? Domestic audience sort of way. But yeah, it's when you don't have a place to go back to, the idea of a place to go back to becomes even stronger. And I think a lot of the Wanderer stories are made stronger, are just made like instinctually stronger on a lower level by the lack of a home. But also these characters are often like deprived of their home and forcibly expelled. Girls Last Tour, Trigun, Samurai Champloo, these sort of things, like they don't have anywhere to go back to. Like the Wandering is the home, and once they have completed this personal spiritual journey, the home will manifest itself.
That and another like common theme in anime is always found family. You know, like
find
your family, and then that's your new home.
Which I wish that was how travel works, because man, I meet people when I have to take a plane flight. I mean, not anymore because planes are falling out of the sky left and right. But like a lot of times, the people you meet on trips are crazy or assholes. Which I guess some anime does capture. Like Those Who Hunt Elves is definitely a like wanderer. It's got a quest. They're like, but the quest is to strip every elf in reality naked. So not a very achievable quest. But like they're all assholes who hate each other, and that is a lot of something that I think is not always captured in the road trip. Like it's hard to be on the road with someone for days at a time, and you discover every annoying thing they do.
Another common thing, like this isn't necessarily a traveling sort of setting, but like westerns, you know, a lot of times, you know, and then and more specifically to my current interests, martial arts comics. A lot of them have, you know, they travel into town, they go to a tavern, and then they get in a fight. There's your assholes. And I think that's pretty common in these sorts of stories too. At least the ones that have a bigger goal in mind, I think.
Yeah, I think Samurai Champloo is actually surprisingly good at that. And I think it's partly because it is just like full of assholes. Like it's full of all these small time crooks who just want to con them, steal from them, attack them, try and whatever. They're all assholes. And two-thirds of our little traveling trio are assholes as well in different ways. And I think that's part of what makes that one of Watanabe's better shows. And Samurai Champloo and I think Bebop to a degree both have like this crew of assholes. And I think there's definitely a difference between shows which are about one person traveling around and people about a crew of people traveling around. And I think often, as with Doom Train, I remember Andy had a lot of complaints that, oh, they're talking so much. Like, dude, anytime you go on a journey as a group of people, all you can freaking do when you're sitting around on a train is do small talk. It's what journeys consist of in groups. It's just killing time by talking about any old fucking thing that comes to mind. And I think Eurocam actually does that really well. It has a really good sense of small talk and of the small things which make journeys in our modern life. It's just like packed lunches, strange snacks, small cafes, like even smaller talk. Like that's what most modern commutes and journeys are like. It's sticking your headphones on in as you sit down in the middle of a tube full of annoying people just to get half an hour of quiet before you get to your destination. Like, modern travel is all these small things which are not dramatic, and which is why you need a show which isn't trying to be dramatic like Eurocamp to kind of fit those in. And I think it also benefits because it's a lot of individual small journeys. It's traveling to a campsite and spend a night there, coming back, just doing a little tour. And because it hasn't got one journey as its whole purpose for the whole arc, it's able to concentrate more on the moment to moment rather than the grand arc. And I think that's definitely a kind of show like that exists within this. The ones which are more about like those moments, like that sort of conscious effort to take in what's around you, like to the tour in tourism. And it's also strange, like how little is said about tourism in these shows. Like I feel like there's definitely a genre of Western shows and things which are about people going away on holiday and acting like idiots. Like, this is the archetypal British one, at least. Oh, teenagers heading off to a Spanish island to get drunk, get high, hook up, all that stuff. And I feel like there's no Japanese equivalent of the summer holiday, the tryst, or the drunken bender in Las Vegas. Like, I feel like those should be the sort of stories we're actually told somewhere, but which aren't generally. Like, one of the few shows which I can remember which has ever showed tourism as, like, in a bad light is Robbie Hatchie, which was a show me, and I think, John, whether or not you can remember, it's another matter. I watched it many years back, which is just, like, this sci-fi series about two down-on-the-luck people who are basically conned by false advertising and traveling to a far-off planet where they will find the secret to happiness and eternal life. And of course, it's nothing of the sort, and that all throughout their journey they're just, every place just rips them off, and it's all garish and brightly colored. And it feels like tourism in so many Japanese shows is just incredibly, I'm not sure if mild's the right word, but it's so responsible and benign.
Yeah, I think that's a very accurate way of describing it, because as you brought up tourism, I remember that, like, you know, I dismissed the idea of bringing up things like those escape to the country shows, but a lot of them also involve going to a small town, and then that small town is desperate to increase their tourism through any means necessary. They just want people to visit. They want the community to grow. And
official Keyframes anime Sakura Quest being brought up here.
Was it going to mention it? Because I was hoping you would. Yes, but that's exactly right. Like, Sakura Quest was one, and it's such a common
thing. But it's all over, because, like, Only Yesterday is the same thing. It's an office lady who's bored and wants to go, like, recapture her childhood by, like, re-experiencing the countryside. And, like, she's daydreaming on the train about how influential these moments were in her life, with the anticipation that what she's headed towards is going to be influential as well. And that level of anticipation with tourism and the possibility of a memory mismatch or disappointment doesn't really come up. It is very, like, safe and benign, and you can just kind of, like, go somewhere and feel different and be different, as you said early on in this episode, John, like, kind of just try on a new self and just change the context.
Yeah.
So often in this sort of location shows that John describes, it's okay, someone has transferred here and now they get to go to a new school, and someone will introduce them to the local shops and all these things, and it's very safe and very mediated. They're always given a friend early on, someone who can help them work their way through any misunderstandings. It's very rare you see someone just go somewhere and make a complete fool of themselves, just completely show themselves up and not really. In a weird way, Wolf Children sort of does it a little bit. Considering, like, how the very essence of drama is conflict, it's so rare to that people are allowed to fuck up and fuck up badly. And I feel like that's such a universal thing. Maybe it's just too universal. Maybe people don't want to remember that. Maybe that's just what it comes down to.
A lot of it is just because those sorts of shows are ultimately fantasies about reinventing yourself. And in that fantasy, your conflict is with your past, not with your present or future. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what they choose to focus on in those stories. And I agree, it is a safe way to play it. But I mean, to be honest, most fiction plays things safe. That's just the way it goes.
I do sort of slightly disagree with Ben that the idea like the quests should be totally pushed out from this. Like,
I was just trying to limit the amount of stuff we're going to talk about, because almost every fantasy story is about like, we're going somewhere to do this thing.
Lord of the Rings, a travel show.
Basically,
like, I mean, I would say yes in some ways, but I think it's good to set limits too. I did not set limits.
Tourist Board of New Zealand would very much agree with you, John. Like, that film has very much, no joke, created an entire tourism industry in New Zealand where people just
political consequences associated with that tourism industry too.
Oh yeah. You can just say, oh yeah, there's a reason why I started this with a monomyth, that if we branch out wide enough, everything is a quest, everyone's trying to get somewhere. But I do think like there are things like A Place Further Than the Universe or Doom Train, it is still a quest archetype. You are still going to somewhere to do something, where I think I let those ones, particular ones, slide, because it's a journey where you are heading towards not just somewhere, but someone at that place. Where in A Place Further Than the Universe, they're looking for one of the characters' mothers. In Doom Train, they're going after their estranged friend. It's that heading towards someone. Traveling towards a meeting is a very, very specific human thing. Like, it's something we do all the time. It's like, it's one of the main reasons we travel, to meet a person, to see someone. I think I will allow a show where you're traveling is very specifically to, we're going to X to meet Y. Like, that feels, mm-hmm. feels like on the right side of the quest. I feel like I've become more fond of Doom Train the more time passes. It did a lot right.
I always love that kind of percolation, fermentation, that sort of thing.
You mentioned One Piece when we were talking about shows, John, like as a show where I felt like it didn't really have a destination. It was more of a treasure hunt. But you kind of espoused it as a representation of kind of just people who, similar to what you were talking about with the motorbikes, who are just after freedom, who are just going, who are journeying for the sheer love of journeying.
I mean, it is very much a fantasy pirate story. So, I mean, every fantasy pirate story is about freedom, right? Like, they want to just be able to do whatever they want, whenever they want. And in One Piece in particular, they are Luffy, Monkey D. Luffy, Lord of the Pirates. Not yet king, though, because he needs the One Piece to be the king of the pirate. I don't know what I'm saying. Anyway.
Strange women handing out swords. Strange women and pawns handing out swords is not a basis for governance.
That's true. But the One Piece is a real thing that they are chasing. We know that much. And we also know it on a meta level, because the author, Oda, has said as much, that it is going to be a concrete thing. We just don't know what that thing is. But anyway, Luffy's after that because he wants to be the king of pirates. And he wants to be the king of pirates because he just does whatever he wants. That's what he does. And
is the idea that once you are king of the pirates, everyone is free? Is that the ultimate aim? It's like, once you're king, you can go, right, fuck it, everyone's free now. I say so, and I'm the king.
I don't think that's the case, no. But I mean, he is fighting like the government and all that shit.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Point, so
he's anti-authoritarian.
Like, oh, he's 100%. Like, from the start, he rescues Zoro, who's getting, I think, executed, fights him to join his crew, and, like, that's the start of his journey, basically. I don't know if I have a whole lot to say about it, but, like, it is very much a location-driven show. Like, they go from island to island, and they solve problems there exactly in the same way that we were talking about, like, with all the Wanderers. It's just, you know, they have a more concrete motivation than wandering.
Do they ever spend much time on the open sea? Because it occurs to me, like, in a weird way, that you talk about the ocean and you talk about the wide expanses of the US, and there's a weird kinship there.
They do. I think that it's kind of sparing because you can't just repeat the same story of traveling across open sea over and over, you know what I mean?
True.
But like, you know, sometimes they sail for a while and they find, you know, they have to deal with sea monsters or whatever, or they have to deal with weird ocean currents or bad weather, etc. Like, stuff like that does come up for sure in the story. But by and large, it's about going to the next location and then from there going to the next location and then from there going to the next location.
Island of the week, very much then.
And the crew grows over time and all that. So, you know, you, again, going back to that family thing, they're very close like that.
Running from authority is definitely a theme which crops up. As it's like, as, I think as the cops are after you, better run, better find a new town where no one knows your name and you can slide into the background and lay low for a bit. And that sort of crime story, I don't think we really see you outside Lupin. So many of the stories end with Lupin and his crew just like hanging around in some old place in France, just a couple of bottles of wine in hand, killing time. I like that as the idea of like an escape to a place where people do not know that you do not have wanted posters plastered around with your face on. And yeah, like that's like the sort of the culmination of a chase. Like, you've been chased, you have chased and you have succeeded in escaping. It literally is an escape to the country, I guess. But I think like it's there's room to explore things where we get like Golden Canary, things like that, where you have a tale of both the people who are chasing and the people who are being chased.
I can talk about the one that I watched for this theme, which I chose because I googled, hey, good anime movie about traveling, and I got a bunch of different threads suggesting Suzume, the Makoto Shinkai film from 2022. Yes. And, well, first of all, it's not accurate. There's traveling in the show, but it's not about traveling, but it does some good things with it. So, like, man, I regret bringing it up because I really don't have a whole lot to say.
Yeah, I watched it so long ago, and my main memory is just that she's mean to the cat.
Mean to the cat. That poor cat. The cat just wanted, to have a friend, basically.
And yeah, it's hard. It's hard for me to stomach. But yeah, I do remember that it was kind of like an interdimensional romp that kind of had, like, flavors of Howl's Moving Castle of, like, doors opening to different places.
Right, so the doors open to the afterlife, which is called the Ever After, and the Ever After houses this giant worm thing, and if the worm escapes, it'll cause earthquakes. It's the explanation for big earthquakes in Japan in this series, I guess, or in this movie. Mm-hmm. Which it doesn't really play with. Like, an earthquake happens, but it's always like really low intensity, and Japan's used to that, so they don't care. And then there's a threat of a giant earthquake, and that giant earthquake never happens, so it's just kind of like, it feels really weak. I really liked the movie up until like the last 30 minutes, at which point it just wrapped up so cleanly.
Yeah.
And also it was a romance, I guess, which I didn't buy that romance. Like, I mean, I know that I'm not big on romance stories in general, but I like them if they work, and this one didn't. It just felt kind of like it was there because it was supposed to be there.
Which makes me sad, because I feel like Shinkai Makoto, if there was one thing his early work would have had me characterize about his entire career, it's that he's really good at the strange adhesion between two people, and how even when distance attenuates you, I mean, obviously his first work, but even like Place Promise to Us, Children Chase Lost Voices, these are about like you get a connection with someone that distance does not reduce, even though like isolation or travel do attenuate all other things in your life. Yeah,
and in this case, like, she is traveling the whole time with the boy that she falls in love with, who is named Sota, I think. Her name's Suzume, obviously, is the title. But Sota is possessing a chair, like a three-legged children's chair, and that's sort of like the source of some jokes, and also just kind of becomes the reality of the movie. So, like, they're hanging out all the time. They're always together, but it feels like...
Quick question. Ambulant chair or does she have to, like, carry him around? Like,
ambulant. Yeah, it moves. He moves. Sometimes she carries him around to, you know...
And yet the chair moves. Sorry.
Sometimes she carries him around to, you know, disguise that he can move, or to, you know, to make it so they can get through places without drawing attention, which doesn't really come into play. Like, some people take pictures or video of the chair moving and they're like, wow, look at this crazy thing I just saw, and then it just gets brushed off. Like most things in the movie. I feel like if there's one theme of the movie, it's that nothing matters. the reason that it was recommended as a good traveling story, I think, is because she starts out in the southwest of Japan. I forget exactly where, and then she works her way northeast. Over the course, like shutting or finding the open doors and shutting them to keep the worm from getting out. Like, so she rolls into a new area. She finds a new person who's really nice to her. They help her out, and she gets kind of close to them. Mm-hmm. And then she moves on to the next area. And the whole time they're chasing the cat, whose name is, I think, Daijin. And the cat's just kind of this sort of menacing, but mostly just kind of endearing, sort of mischievous little dude. But, you know, they are suspicious of Daijin because once the cat showed up, the dude turned into a chair. Possessed the chair, rather. and so they treat the cat like shit. And then, yeah, like you said, like, I just feel bad for the cat, really. The cat really just wanted to be free from the fate of being this keystone that keeps the gates closed. That's all the cat wanted.
Yeah,
it wasn't being greedy. It just wanted to be free, which, you know, I guess going back to how traveling makes me feel.
Yeah.
I get it. I get it, little cat. I'm sorry that you got stuck being a stone again at the end. Wow, great story. Anyway, besides that, like, it has some nice motifs. I think while it's traveling, like, while they're traveling along, like, sometimes she'll look at her phone, and, like, you can see, like, she always has it set to show, like, where she started and where she is, so you can see that slowly over time, like, on the GPS, the map, the little markers gets further and further, and that's a really neat way of showing the progress that she's making. There's also one moment where she's on the bullet train and she's looking at it and she's like, oh, this goes so fast. So, like, she clearly is like, this is all new experiences for her, but because she's so focused on finding these gates, she doesn't really have, like, the story isn't about the traveling. The traveling is just incidental to the story. Mm-hmm. That's why I think it's a bad recommendation for a traveling movie. I think it's not a good movie. I wouldn't recommend that movie at all. And I like Shinkai stuff a lot. Like, what I've seen from him before, I've always liked. I have not seen Your Name, and I know that's his, like, biggest one. But, yeah. Garden of Words, that one.
Yeah.
That's very much a chase in a weird way, the one you were describing, like, the following,
yeah,
the cat.
100%, and, yeah.
The opposite of the chase is I think, the race. Like, it's going somewhere as fast as you can. And Red Line is obviously where you go here, just because it's animation fun time, like, just about the sensation of moving quickly. And that aspect of travel, I think it captures really well. Like, it at times pays tribute to the generation which came before it, which now mostly exists as comedy memes. Things like Initial D, which we now just get referenced, things like Eurocamp, where the mildly alcoholic teacher takes them along a mountain road and starts doing drifts and the Eurobeat kicks in. And... Yes, like, that's such a common joke to make. It is like any show where they're driving along a mountain road. Okay, oh, shall we do it? We shall. And they drift and the Eurobeat kicks in. But I think there must have been, it's a time lost to us where Initial D was in fact fast and exhilarating instead of just like comedy gold. In terms of capturing speed and the feeling of traveling, The thing everyone remembers about Akira, if you're going to remember one scene, it's the bicycle chase. Like, that way of converting a feeling into a visual thing of the lights crossing and zooming through a landscape, like, that was a wonderful bit of animation doing what it does best, taking a feeling and making it into something visual.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I just kind of want to go back to Redline, because originally I was thinking that I would come on here and talk about, sort of as a joke, but also mostly serious, like Run with the Wind, for example. It's not a show about traveling, but it is a show about moving and always moving forward. And also to go back to that feeling of freedom, like, something that has always appealed to me about the idea of running is that freedom to just kind of take off and go anywhere. And I think that, like I said, it's not a traveling show, but it gives me a lot of the same feel goods in my head space. I think racing is a sort of, like, it is a sort of freedom, like, to just kind of go.
I have recently another show which actually does that really well, and pretty much nothing else well, because it is just JoJo's skating is Skate 8, or Skinfinity, as I think
oh man,
you famously dubbed it.
I love my old jokes. I'm so funny.
its key thing is downhill skateboarding, and it actually captures that, like, the idea of speed really well, like just moving people through these environments at one hell of a rate. Weirdly, like, I think it's like close to 3 years after the show was broadcast, it recently had a single bonus OVA came out, which is just them, like, the exact opposite of what the show was. No thrilling downhill races, just everyone sort of like chilling about and doing what they do in their day-to-day lives. So we just get the, like, billionaire Dio wannabe who dresses as a Spanish matador and skates on a skateboard with bullhorns on it.
Sure.
Instead, sitting around in his study, drinking a weird mix of cognac and brown sugar and tea. This strange little ritual they decided to give him, which Ben actually revealed to me, is it actually a real thing?
It's a tradition popular among Russian Jews to put burned sugar in cognac. Weird. Why is it in the anime? This is the worst kind of aside, because yeah. I have no information. I'm just baffled that, like, someone's assistant did some research and they had to include it, clearly, is what I always think whenever it's these things.
The reason I mention it is kind of the inverse, in that I wonder if that's the result of travel. I wonder if that's a result of someone going somewhere, like, someone saying, oh yeah, we have this little treat we have here. We have this, like, little bit of cognac and that, and his host, like, treating him to that. That's what travel should be about, in a weird way, about these little rituals which we don't know about, but to someone are incredibly meaningful, and learning about them and that making our world bigger. It's strange how so many times all these shows about travel, you learn the most superficial things about places. No one sticks around long enough to learn what makes a place a place. It's maybe just this episodic later nature of the majority of anime scenes. That there's so few of the things we're talking about are films, and so many of them are TV.
I'd like to bring up a not film. I don't know if either of you have ever seen or read Master Keaton.
Master Keaton? No.
No.
Okay, so it's a manga originally written by and drawn by Naoki Urasawa, who I think did 20th Century Boys and...
Oh, okay, cool.
Monster? And Billy Bat, which I don't think is an English translation, or at least not an official one, which I learned today. And
also did Pluto.
Pluto, yes. His very distinctive style, so I can tell.
Mm-hmm.
Master Keaton, I watched years ago. Like, it was, I think it was one of the first shows I got into, like, when I was first getting back into anime, like, after college. So it's about this ex-British SAS guy who's half Japanese, half British. He's currently an archaeology professor and an insurance investigator for this worldwide insurance company called Lloyd's.
Real Lloyd's of London.
Yeah.
Lloyd's of London, yes, exactly. So he gets to travel around the world, basically, investigating things for this insurance company. But you can tell, like, from the way that he projects himself and the way that he, like, observes things, especially in the first episode that I watched this morning. I wish I had thought of this show before this morning, so I could have watched more of it, but it didn't hit me. So, yeah. Like, the first episode, he goes to this island in Greece, the island of Ithaca, I believe. Like, there's nothing on the island except for this very small village where only one person lives at this point because it's just so old, there's nothing there. But he has this way of observing the world and, like, seeing things and appreciating that place for what it is. You can tell that, like, it's not the insurance thing that's driving him. It's not money. It's his desire to see more of the world. And I think that in that way, even though the show isn't about travel, like, it is very much about travel because that's what drives him. Which I think is an interesting thing now that I say that out loud. Like, in some stories, like, traveling is the show, but in this story, traveling is the character. And I think that I like that more as I think about it on the spot here. I don't know if the whole show does continue to do that. I'm pretty sure it gets into a big arc at some point because, I mean, it's from that author who has written a lot of big arc stories. But I do remember loving that show a lot, and I'm looking forward to watching more because that first episode was very strong.
Is it available anywhere legal?
It's not illegal to search YouTube.
Okay, yeah. but if, for instance, I wanted to watch it, could I find it somewhere?
Buy Blu-rays used, yeah, or DVDs.
It's interesting because, like, this is a 1999 vintage.
Late 90s. I think the OVA finished airing in 2000, if I recall. Something like that. I loved it. I loved it so much when I watched it back then.
This would have been, like, just pre strangely enough, speaking of like piracy, this like falls pre the dawn of true internet like piracy, like
yeah.
this
yeah,
in like... terms of like after about 2000, I'd say about probably 2003, 2004, when things like LimeWire, Napster, etc. really take off and like file sharing services blossom. Like so many of us would not watch anime today if it hadn't been for downloading some 720, or if you were lucky 720, probably 360 EP video of shonky anime just out of curiosity. And like mm-hmm. this show clearly just exists just before that happened, where no, it was never current to the generation who was doing this. It was always just slightly in the back, just slightly behind.
Yeah, I think it's definitely not a series you hear about. Like, people just don't bring it up. And
yeah.
I can't say that that's a shame, because I don't remember enough about it to say that it's really good. But I can tell you that I love that first episode, and I will be watching more so that I can rewatch the whole thing.
Mm.
Yeah, because I mean, if I'm going to flash my cred, I watched Berserk for the first time on 320 by 240 AVIs, which I don't even know how I read that those subtitles, because Jesus.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, man, I love that postage stamp size.
Yeah, before the big file sharing services, it was often FTP links on IRC.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
like once those are gone, especially like once an FTP server is gone, like that's it. There's no cache. There's no mirror. Sometimes there are mirrors. I remember like there was a website called like the Hylia that was just some guy who was just maintained a like web GUI front end to his FTP server from the mid 90s. And it's just like, yeah, the level of archiving for stuff that will never, ever, even Discotheque or Eastern Star, like never get a release in the US.
Mm.
Like I'm surprised even that Monster got like remastered and kicked up on Netflix. Mm. They're just these like long non-traditional shows. And speaking of Monster, also one that's about travel. Granted, it's about quest and a pursuit of this this little Nazi child. But that also is about like going across like post-war Europe and kind of seeing things. And I do, to reach back to talking about tourism, I do think that a lot of travel shows do have a measure of vicarious tourism. And a lot of the reason that I think a lot of shows travel across Japan is just to see the sites that people know and to have this kind of like standard rhythm. But you see it even in stuff that doesn't take place in Japan. I was thinking like Nadia and the Secret of the Blue Water, apart from like the island and Africa arcs, is about like globe trotting across like the long 19th century world and seeing like Paris at the height of the Belle Epoque and all this sort of other sort of stuff. Yeah, I don't know. It's neat to look at these screenshots. It does look a lot like Pluto. This guy has one face.
He has a very much. Yeah, he does have a style.
It's the nose that always gives away.
Yeah.
Looking at
1999, like there's a reason that another reason why that show gets forgot, because that's a stacked fucking year. Like Legend of Galactic Heroes, Cowboy Bebop, Perfect Blue, Trigun. Serial Experience in that lane.
It's definitely not a loud show. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's also one which doesn't like seem like it would be of interest to the kind of age of person who was downloading stuff in 2003, 2004. Like,
yeah, I'll also say like to his character, Keaton is kind of a quiet badass. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, he knows how to get shit done, but he doesn't boast about it. He just does it, and it's over. In the first episode, and I don't know if this is true, but he says this, and he MacGyvers a slingshot out of a wooden spoon and some scotch tape, and then like throws some rocks at people's heads using it. And it's really windy on the island, and he says, "I told you when you were," because he had history with the bad guy. "I told you like during the SAS training that in a windy area, a slingshot is better than a gun." And like they're 10 feet apart. I don't think that's true for a gun. I think a gun can overcome that 10 feet. But anyway, that's the kind of guy he is. Like, he just does stuff and it's cool, even if it's a little dumb. but also, I just love how, like, he takes a moment to, like, look at a keystone on a bridge that's kind of falling apart. He's like, the keystone's about to fall out. And then later he uses that keystone to collapse the bridge to stop some of the bad guys and stuff. And I don't know. I can't just gush about it, but I really liked the first episode. I'm going to watch more.
This is always like my best case scenario for any particular chat about anime is finding something I sort of tangentially knew about, but didn't really know enough to want to seek it out, and someone persuading me to seek it out. So I think I'll probably do that and try and watch Master Keaton.
I do want to say the OP for Master Keaton, it gives me real good traveling vibes. Just it's just purely instrumental, and it's just like these scene, like various scenes from places he's visited, like ruins and then like nature and stuff. And ooh, it's a good OP. Ooh, okay, that's it.
Man, the quality of these rips look awful. Oh my god. Oh my god. Look at this over sharpened mess. My god. My god, this is the Blu-ray. What did they do to this?
Yeah, like, I heard the Blu-ray was real bad.
Oh my god. Oh god. Like,
what has happened there?
It's a war crime is what's happened. Oh my god.
They have a review of Macross, Do You Remember Love, up on Anime News Network at the moment. And they talk about how it looks really fuzzy, and they did some research and found out that basically that some of the shots of the original film were took out of focus when they're just being shown on a CRT or projected on a thing.
Right, yeah.
That's fine. It doesn't cause a problem. But when you're trying to upscale that and create sharp things, it's just completely impossible. You just end up with this really soft, fuzzy, uncrisp looking show. They only know where the film is. They don't know where the cells are for that particular one.
That's what happened with one episode of Evangelion on the Blu-rays. It like is noticeably fuzzier because they're just transferring film. But yeah,
it happens a lot. I know there's like multiple Doctor Who episodes that are just gone forever, or just audio, really shitty audio, stuff like that.
But man, I have not seen something just absolutely mutilated with denoising and over sharpening than this. Oh my god, just butter smeared mess. Oh my god. Okay, got to get back into a more cheerful mood after seeing just absolute butchery. Cool. Okay, well that was a wide ranging discussion, somewhat appropriately. Let's go ahead and wrap it up there. No break this time. All gas, no breaks, and we will see you next week for our discussion of the end of this season and the beginning of the coming one. And in the meantime, rate and view, subscribe to us on the podcast platform of your choice. Find us on Facebook, Keyframes Pod. Find us on Blue Sky, also Keyframes Pod. Email us questions, keyframespodcast@gmail.com. And most of all, tell a friend.
But not just any friend.
Thanks, John. Andy's not here, but
tell a friend that you meet while traveling, and you make good friends, or you get in a bar fight. Who knows? Just tell them and make sure they watch or listen.
Tell a friend who's a strange, genetically engineered near alien who is wandering around a desert wasteland out of a sense of Christian-like penance for his evil brother, and also he's got a sweet gun and coat.
Yeah, that's more likely than what I said.
or tell them if they ever happen to be in Japan and they meet a stranger called Japan
is our episode title. There we go.
So meet a stranger called Andy, buy him a drink, and treat him well.
Exactly. Say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye,
everybody.
Oh,
stranger called Japan.